This is the second presentation in the series, Let Jesus Come, Let Santa Go. It is entitled Santa and St. Nicholas and is given by Milo Shannon Thornberry.
An inevitable question for anyone who begins to think seriously about changing Christmas is, what are we going to do about Santa? This question troubles not only the parents of small children, but the question is unsettling for a lot of other people because it touches deep feelings down inside of us from childhood memories. Now, there are lots of reasons for not disturbing the Santa myth and traditions, and they're easily stated, and we ought to look at them right at the outset. First of all, fantasy and mythology are all important parts of growing up. Santa is an important part of our cultural mythology. He's been there for a long time, as long as most of us have been alive. And it's an important part of the mythological elements of growing up. Second, the mythological character of Santa is admirable. He gives without expecting anything in return. Now, I submit you can do a lot worse than Santa when you take a look at the possible heroes that our children might have from television and from our society in general. Santa's not so bad. The third is that the Santa traditions are firmly fixed elements in our Christmas celebrations. To remove them or significantly change them might be to end the celebration of Christmas as we've come to know it. And fourth, we don't know how to change without, one, breaking the hearts of our children. Oh, I remember 6 or 7 years ago when we first changed our family practices in with regard to Santa Claus, and we sat down in October with our children and said, in essence, there's not going to be any Santa this year. Now, we did it not so abruptly, but there was that one family meeting where we said, this year Santa's not going to come. Santa doesn't exist. Our youngest girl, who was 6 years old at the time, simply said, that's all right, you can not believe in Santa if you want, but I'm going to continue to believe in Santa Claus. She was going to keep all bases covered. Well, I suspect one of the reasons for not changing the way we deal with Santa Claus is that we don't know how to do it without breaking the hearts of our children. Or without possibly doing psychological harm to them. I remember last year I was listening to the radio and heard a child psychologist talking about the possible serious trauma that can come to a child who no longer believes in Santa Claus or who has the Santa myth dispelled. It's possible. And I suspect that we don't know how to change without upsetting our relatives. And maybe not just our immediate relatives. You may find that members of your family that you thought would surely be sympathetic to this are not so sympathetic at all. We didn't have the experience in our family with Santa Claus, but we did have the experience with the Easter Bunny. One of the grandparents knew that we were eliminating the Easter Bunny. She simply ignored it and has since then. For over 6 years, she's simply continued to be the Easter Bunny for our children if they come to her house on Easter. She doesn't argue the case. She doesn't reprimand us for taking away the Easter Bunny. She simply ignores the fact that we've done it. And we've decided that she knows why we've done it, but we've decided that we just have to let that go. It's difficult. And you'll find that relatives will be upset if you talk about eliminating Santa Claus from your Christmas. I think you'll also find, though, some unexpected support. Some people who will have been afraid to express their own feelings about it are going to say, hey, I've been thinking about that for a long time. Well, I think the last thing is that we don't know how to change without somehow becoming a Scrooge ourselves. There's something down deep in all of us that fears becoming sober, about this part of Christmas. Somehow that if we take away the jolly red man in the suit, then somehow we're less human ourselves and are becoming old and old-fashioned and old fogies. That's the case for not disturbing the Santa myth and traditions, and you may not want to go any further than that. The case is impressive. I wish that the case for changing were as simply and easily stated. It's not. I think, though, that when you hear it, you'll see that it's even more compelling. Even though many people feel alarmed at what's happened to Christmas, it's hard to point the finger at Santa Claus, who's presumed to represent everything positive and generous and jolly about our culture. I think, though, that if we look more closely, we see, first, that the Santa myth and traditions have been thoroughly exploited by commercial interests in order to get people to consume whatever legitimate fantasy and mythological functions that Santa might have had in the past have largely been deformed and lost by this exploitation. From early November on, the television screen is flooded with Christmas specials featuring Santa, Santa's reindeer, Santa's elves, snow people, and anything else the producers can think up to get us hyped up about Christmas. Now, this Santa Claus and his crew have little to do with the celebration of cultural traditions or religious sensibilities. Their sole function, along with advertising that makes use of them, is to get us to go out and buy. You may notice that the TV specials about Christmas tend to disappear about 2 weeks before Christmas. Their work was done in November and in early December. Not only have they primed us with a sense of obligation to spend money, but they've also distracted us from the actual purpose of this holiday, which is to celebrate the birth of Christ. I think there's another reason, though, that calls into question our continuance of the Santa myth and traditions. And that is that Santa's become a god of material wealth and consumption. While the original focus was on Santa's generosity and on his trade of giving without receiving, he's now become the king of new toys, automobiles, fur coats, appliances, clothing. His image says that joy and happiness come out of the bag on his back. Instead of giving himself, he gives things, suggesting that the way to show love and solicitude is through material offerings. It may sound extreme to compare Santa to Baal or the golden calf, but when you consider the plight of rich children who are showered with presents in lieu of real parental attention, and the plight of poor children who wonder if they are unloved because they don't receive any gifts, Santa's come to represent the materialism in our society. So far, what I've been describing is an image problem. We see that a myth and a tradition, which once had some religious significance or cultural significance, has been exploited and abused in order to further commercial interests. Wouldn't it be possible to restore Santa Claus to his original significance by reemphasizing the magical, mysterious generosity of the old, jolly old elf? Maybe. But the odds for success seem slim. Even if we could change Santa's image in our own homes, the chance that Madison Avenue will release this lucrative hostage is almost nil. And regardless of how we attempt to refocus the Santa tradition in our own homes, the fact remains that Santa doesn't come to the poor. And this may be the most compelling reason for those of us who want to celebrate Christmas as the birth of Christ to seriously consider abandoning Santa Claus. For every child who's thrilled with a new bicycle or a pair of roller skates, there's another child who feels neglected, unloved, inferior, because his or her parents can't afford to buy presents. For every parent who overspends a bit or a lot to give their children a good Christmas, there are parents who go into serious debt in response to cultural pressure to buy gifts. This is bad enough. But when we consider that this is done in conjunction with the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ, the one who came to bring good news to the poor and who warned the non-poor about the dangers of materialism, the irony becomes truly overwhelming. The Apostles' Creed of this Santa theology, if you will, is well expressed in the Christmas ditty, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. You remember the words. You'd better watch out, you'd better not pout, you'd better not cry, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, he's checking it twice. He's going to find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness sake. So you'd better watch out. Like God, Santa seems to be omniscient. Santa knows all about you, especially if you've been bad or good or naughty or nice. And like all good theology, there's a day of reckoning or judgment. And that's when Santa comes to town. The standard for judgment is whether or not you've been good or bad. And presents at Christmas are the rewards for good behavior. Now, what's so bad about that? From my perspective, Santa Claus theology perpetuates a cruel hoax. While he claims to reward people who have been nice and good, in fact, his rewards are passed out on the basis of who's got money, irrespective of moral virtue. Santa Claus theology says to poor children, you don't get gifts because you're bad. Though not so cruel, the flip side of this notion is just as deadly from a spiritual point of view. If you get gifts, you're good. How many of us ever really received switches and pieces of coal in our Christmas stockings? So what can you do about Santa? If you've tried to observe the coming of Santa and the birth of Christ simultaneously and found that it just doesn't work, you may want to consider one of the two following alternatives. The first alternative is to do away with Santa altogether. I don't need to tell you how radical a step this is, but it may be the only one for individuals and families who are able to face squarely the contradiction between Santa Claus theology, the teachings of Christ, and the impact of the Santa traditions on the poor. What will replace the Santa tradition in your celebration? I guess that very question shows how much imagination has been applied to Santa and how little to the story of Jesus' birth. What we have to do is to find new traditions, new activities, not simply take away the traditions that have been a part of our family, but to find new ones, ones that do reflect the meaning and are consistent with the message of the birth of Jesus Christ. Now, part of the joy of this new approach to Christmas will be bringing your own creativity and ingenuity to bear on the story of Christ's birth. You'll be surprised what energies are available for celebrating the advent of Jesus if you're not consumed with preparation for the advent of Santa Claus. There's no sense in underestimating the task that lies before you if you choose this alternative, though. If you have young and perhaps some not so young children who still believe in Santa Claus, you'll be faced with a re-education task of the first magnitude. And you'll have most of society against you, and probably some not so distant relatives as well. Once you've decided not to perpetuate the Santa myth, only you can decide how best to proceed with your children. If there are other families with children who are also doing away with Santa Claus, it'll be helpful to collaborate with them. You'll need the support of other adults in working on this, and your children's awareness that they're not the only children in the world that are going through this. I can't stress that enough. It makes all the difference in the world if your children who are experiencing something that is radically different in terms of the norms of the culture that they experience, as in doing away with Santa Claus, to know and be in contact with other children who are experiencing the same thing is enormously helpful. For one thing, it helps the children to understand that their parents are not the only crazy ones in the county. Those who've made this change with their families usually find that there's a one step forward, two steps back process. It's a process that is both painful and joyful, and you can expect both if you decide to eliminate Santa Claus. There is another alternative, and that is to reclaim the origins of the Santa myth in the form of the legends of St. Nicholas. Not much is really known about this 3rd or 4th century bishop from Myra, which is in present-day Turkey. The stories of his anonymous giving to those in need offer useful giving models which may actually aid in our recovery of the religious significance of Christmas without completely exorcising the Santa tradition. Will it work? You'll probably find it easier to bring in St. Nicholas than simply to remove Santa Claus. Because of Santa's place in our culture, you'll probably still experience resistance even if you try to replace his current image with St. Nicholas. And on the other hand, that there may be a temptation to turn St. Nicholas into another version of Santa Claus rather than using this figure to express the true spirit of the birth of Christ. Shifting the focus to St. Nicholas can be an important transitional tool for shifting the focus away from Christmas as a time to receive presents and towards Christmas as a time to share what we have with those Christ came to serve. I'd like to tell you a story that you might find it useful if you are making this change and you do want to institute some St. Nicholas traditions that you might try telling your children. It's called Christmas Without Santa Claus, a story for children of all ages. Christmas Without Santa? Yep, that's what I said. It's hard to imagine Christmas without Santa Claus, isn't it? Why, some would say Santa bringing gifts is the most important part of Christmas. Strange, isn't it? The name of the holiday is Christmas, not Santamas. Why do you suppose that is? I heard you back there. It's because it's the birthday of Jesus Christ, Christmas. And so it is. But how did Santa Claus get mixed up with Jesus' birthday? He's not Jesus, is he? No. He's not Jesus' father, is he? No. It's kind of a long story. You say you want to hear it anyway? According to a very old legend, about 300 years after the birth of Christ, a child was born to a poor family in Myra. That's a place in the modern-day country of Turkey. His family didn't have much, but they always shared what they had with others. Nicholas was a good child and grew to be quite exceptional. When he was a teenager, he joined a monastery and he became a priest. Do you know what a monastery is? You know what a priest is, don't you? While he was in the monastery, he learned of a poor family who lived in a nearby village. The family didn't have enough money for dowries for their teenage daughters. According to some old customs, dowries were given to the family of the person your daughter was going to marry. Dowries were precious things like money or gold or silver or even expensive jewelry. We don't practice that custom much now, but at the time the dowry was very important. If you didn't have money for a dowry, then your daughter couldn't get married. And in that time, if a woman didn't marry, she might even starve or be sold into slavery. When Nicholas heard about this family, he decided to do something to help. In the dark of night, he took a bag of gold, enough for the dowry of the oldest daughter, and he went to the family's house. Now, he didn't want them to know who had given the gold because he didn't want them to feel indebted to him. Do you think about that? Why didn't Nicholas let the family know who had given them the gold? Do you know what indebted means? houses in those days didn't have windows like ours do today, but there was a hole in the roof to let the smoke out from the cooking and heating. It was through this opening that Nicholas threw the bag of gold so that he wouldn't be seen. On the following two nights, he tossed two more bags of gold through the holes in the roof so that the other two daughters would have dowries and could marry. If you were to draw a picture of Nicholas taking the bag of gold to the house, can you imagine what that picture would look like? And how do you think those family members felt when they found the gold in the fireplace? There are a lot of other legends about Nicholas. Most of the stories are about how he loved and cared for children or people that were in need. In time, he was called a saint, Saint Nicholas. Yep, you guessed it. The idea of Santa Claus did indeed come from Saint Nicholas. The idea about Santa coming down the chimney comes from the time when Saint Nicholas threw the bags of gold through the holes in the roof. The idea of giving gifts, especially to children, also comes from Saint Nicholas. It's not such a bad idea. The way St. Nicholas cared for children and shared with those in need was very much like Jesus. Sharing with those in need was a good way to celebrate the birthday of Jesus. It's not hard to imagine how the ways of St. Nicholas came to be identified with ways to celebrate Jesus' birthday. After a while, people didn't talk much about St. Nicholas. They talked a lot more about Santa Claus. What happened when St. Nicholas began to be called Santa Claus? Now, you may say they only changed the way they said his name, and that's true. But they changed more than just the way people said his name. People forgot that St. Nicholas gave presents to people who were poor and really needed help. They talked about how Santa was supposed to bring presents to all kids who were good. But people didn't notice much when Santa only visited the homes of children whose parents couldn't afford to buy presents, and not the homes of poor children. It didn't seem to matter whether the kids were good or bad after all. Some bad kids got presents because their parents could go out and buy them. Some good kids didn't get anything because their parents were too poor. They probably didn't see the tears in the eyes of one little girl on Christmas morning who thought Santa must not like her. Only a few days before, she had sat on Santa's lap at the shopping mall and told him all the things she had liked to have. And he asked her if she had been good. She thought she had been good. She didn't understand that her mom and dad were just too poor to put presents under the tree. Nobody heard her as she wondered, if Santa comes to good boys and girls, and he didn't come to me, maybe I'm bad. Yes, no doubt about it. Something had happened to the way of St. Nicholas. Santa Claus was now used by stores and on television to get people to buy things they or their family might not even need. Even the children sometimes forgot about giving and began to think about how many things they might get at Christmas. Santa Claus is still with us. You can see him on television or at the shopping malls most any time after the 1st of November. But he's changed. He's not St. Nicholas anymore. He doesn't help us remember whose birthday we are celebrating at Christmas, like St. Nicholas did. What are we going to do this year without Santa Claus? Did you know that that was exactly the same question that some children asked a couple of weeks ago? Now, a couple of those kids had tears in the corners of their eyes. Jamal had already written a letter to Santa. Angela, just that week, had whispered in the mall Santa's ear that she wanted a large dump truck and a whole host of other toys. Now, I'll bet you think the tears were because those kids thought they weren't going to get the things they had asked Santa for. Well, you're wrong. After they heard the story about St. Nicholas and Santa Claus, they thought about the children whom Santa never visited, and that's why there were tears in their eyes. Oh, they had known for some time that it was their mothers and fathers who bought and put gifts from Santa under the tree. But they just kind of thought that all mothers and fathers put gifts from Santa under their trees. If you listen very closely, you can hear their conversation. Santa Claus is cruel, said Jamal. Yeah, Santa is supposed to bring gifts to any kids who are good, Greg responded with indignation. And you know we get our gifts whether we are good or not, chimed in Angela. You may not be good, Angela, but I always am, said Greg, throwing his shoulders back and standing straight. The other kids laughed at his joke. It's probably not very funny if you believe in Santa Claus and then you don't get any present, Greg added. I guess I would think that I'd been bad, mused Angela, and that's not right. There wouldn't be any gifts because the family just didn't have enough money. It wouldn't have anything to do with whether I'd been bad or good. If it weren't for Santa Claus, at least we would know that not getting gifts doesn't have anything to do with whether we're being good or bad, concluded Jamal. So I still think he's cruel. Do you want to know what I'm going to do when I get to school on Monday? He said, waving his arms excitedly. I'm going to tell all the kids what a fake Santa Claus is and how believing in him just hurts poor people. Yeah, joined Greg. I remember how Sam and Janie didn't say much after Christmas last year when we were all bragging about what we got for Christmas. They didn't say anything because they didn't get much. I can't wait to tell them about Santa Claus. Angela didn't seem to be too enthusiastic. I don't know, she said slowly. I think their parents ought to be the ones to tell them. More thoughtful now, like Angela, Greg added, did you know that their dad hasn't been able to find a job since the Ford plant closed? Paying no attention to Greg, Angela went on with her own thoughts. I think we made them feel bad when we bragged about what we got. Instead of telling about Santa, maybe there's something else we could do. Do you mean like trying St. Nicholas way? Wondered Jamal. Instead of thinking so much about what we want to get, maybe we could do some of the things St. Nicholas did. You got some bags of gold you're going to toss down their chimney, quipped Greg. No, but at least we could do something for Sam and Janie this Christmas, Jamal said firmly. Suddenly, remembering what Greg said earlier, Angela blurted out, what they really need is for their dad to be able to get a job. I wish I could drop a job down their chimney, Jamal said with a twinkle in his eye. Come on, don't kid around, said a now serious Greg. Well, I guess I can't get a job for their dad, Jamal concluded, but I'll think of something. While you're thinking of something, why don't we start inviting Sam and Janie to eat at our table in the lunchroom, Angela asked. Now, if you were one of the characters in this story, which one would you like to be? And what kinds of things would you say? And what would you do about Sam and Janie? Is it important who eats at your table at school?
This concludes this presentation.